Welcome back to the Women Who Roar podcast. Today I'm talking with Lisa Larson, LMFT, also known as the Trauma Mama. At age 45, Lisa flatlined from a wasp sting. Then life went back to normal until her son had an anaphylactic reaction that was quickly and safely managed. This turned on in Lisa an uncontrollable and inexplicable anxiety. Even though she was a licensed therapist, she couldn't get to the bottom of it. This experience led Lisa to discover first EMDR, then brain spotting trauma therapies, which uncovered for her that though she had a great childhood, her body was holding on to hidden trauma. Releasing these traumas through brain spotting and EMDR changed the trajectory of Lisa's career and made her a regional expert in trauma therapy. As head of the Pacific Trauma Center, she takes us through what trauma actually is. Spoiler alert, it's more than just war or death. And how it can actually present as anxiety, digestive problems, insomnia, chronic pain, fatigue, and more. She explains where trauma is stored in our bodies and how we use the power of visual fields to release it and why talk therapy doesn't help. Let's jump in. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so excited for our conversation.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about trauma. I love talking about it.
We need more conversations about it. So that's good. So tell us a little bit about your background with trauma and how you got interested in it.
Let's just say that I was in total denial that I even had trauma. I thought trauma was going to war, being raped. I didn't identify whatsoever all the way up into my 40s as being someone that had trauma. I was someone that had a lot of signs and symptoms of trauma, had anxiety. I had all kinds of digestive issues like IBS. I had insomnia, difficulty sleeping, bouts of low self-worth. A lot of people are walking around with symptoms that are really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And they have no clue that it's based on trauma because people don't realize that trauma is so many things. It's not just those huge things like you were in a car accident and the person you were driving died in the car accident. We all know that's trauma. We also know that a natural disaster that wipes out your home is trauma. But I think that the persistent, there's things that happen on an everyday basis that impact our emotional well-being and our physical well-being and even our spiritual well-being greatly that today we would call trauma. And so there is a famous study that Kaiser Permanente did in the suburbs of San Diego. Yeah. And it's called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. And in that study, it showed that the more adverse childhood experiences, which would now be viewed as traumatic experiences, I would never have used that word. And on the adverse childhood experiences scale, there's things like emotional abuse, being put down and insulted, physical abuse. A lot of people say, well, I just got the strap a few times, you know, because that was just the way it was back in when I was a kid. The belt would come out, right? And sexual abuse, of course. But then there's things like not feeling protected, not feeling that your parents care about you, feeling abandoned emotionally, which everybody underestimates how much damage that can cause, both to your self-identity and your self-worth, but also just in how you show up in life. And so that's one of them, or knowing poverty, not having clothes to wear, not having enough food, or maybe there's domestic violence in your home, or there's one mentally ill parent or both, or there's substance abuse, or somebody's in and out of prison. There's all these different things, or divorce and separation as a negative childhood experience. And so I think it's helpful to think about trauma in terms of the impact that it has emotionally and physically, and even on how you identify as a human being, a soul. There's damage there. And I think that even my very traumatized therapist clients, a huge percentage of my clients are therapists, ask me to use the word disturbing experiences instead of trauma. So they'll say, I don't identify as being a trauma survivor. And I'm looking at adverse childhood experiences scale, and they've got 8 out of 10. And so I think there's a lot of denial about what trauma is. We talk about trauma as big T trauma, like the obvious. And then there's the chronic, just being not attended to or not feeling loved, or chronic insults and putting down that nobody identifies as having an impact on you physically and emotionally for life. And so there is a real misunderstanding about what trauma is. And you have to talk about trauma in terms of the everyday person that's walking around with it instead of using that word. And sometimes it's helpful to look at what are the symptoms, and trauma is very physical on the body. I was definitely traumatized in childhood, but I don't even like using the word now. I had a sibling that was chronically physically and emotionally abusive. I did experience sexual abuse. I did experience some physical abuse. I did experience a sense of unsafety. And one of my parents suffered from borderline personality disorder, which made so loving and charming and fun and nice until it wasn't. And then,
yes.
And if you had met me, I still would say this. I had a great life, blessed, because the majority of the time, I really did have a fun and great childhood. There was a lot of love in the home. There was also some terror. And so I just was like, oh, my life was great. And I think that it takes something happening what happened to me is I was just ignoring it. I was a brand new therapist. I had been practicing therapy since I was 38. So at 45 years old, I flatlined from 2 yellow jacket stings.
Wow.
Yeah, I was up in the mountains and playing tennis, and my dog was being attacked by a hive of yellow jackets. And I ran out to unhook my dog from a tree and got stung in my temple and my foot. And I had always gotten real swollen and itchy, but this time was different. And I ended up like not being able to breathe. And I didn't get started going to the hospital until it was too late. And so I ended up flatlining at the hospital. And I wasn't really traumatized by that, honestly. I think the people who helped me were. But I was okay. But then 3 weeks later, my son had an allergic reaction, my oldest child, to a medication he was taking. And I get a phone call that, hey, Jason's in Kaiser emergency room. He's in anaphylaxis. I think he's allergic to this new medication. And I ran to Kaiser Roosevelt. It was like Groundhog Day because he had all the same symptoms that I did. And this kicked off a terror that was out of proportion to what happened. And I was a therapist. I'm a logical person. And I had this feeling that there was a target on me and everybody in my family. And who's going to die next? I'm going to die next. And I became OCD overnight after my son was dying. And I'm not OCD at all. My husband wishes I was. Would love for me to be a neater person. But I started checking. I was checking on all 3 kids. They were all teens. And I'm like, where are you now, Annie? Where are you, Kelly? And they're like, Mom, you need some therapy for your anxiety. I'm like 5 minutes away in El Dorado Hills, which is a really safe town. You really need some therapy. And I'm a therapist with 30 hours a week. At that time, one of my friends that was a therapist said, Lisa, you really need to go deeper than talk therapy. You're having a trauma response. And so my symptoms were these. I was completely anorexic. I couldn't even eat a
grain.
I just could not get food down. I had lost like 10 pounds. I could not sleep. I did not sleep at all. It was almost as if I felt somebody was at the door with a gun. That was the level of my terror. And it made me, but I couldn't stop it. So I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. The anxiety, my hands were shaking. It was like I felt like my very survival was at risk. And I'm trying to talk to therapists going, why is this happening? Why do I have so much anxiety? Why am I so worried that somebody close to me is going to die? And so she said, why don't you try EMDR? And I said, they say you can do one session with that. And that sounds too good to be true. So that can't be right.
Yeah.
She said, I hate to say it, Lisa, but you haven't slept. You've lost 10 pounds. You can't eat. Oh, and I also had total gastrointestinal distress. And it was such a mess. And so I said, okay, I'll go there. And then she wanted to do all this resourcing. Let's find your safe place. And my safe place didn't feel safe. People are saying, I've got one of your children. And I was so agitated, I could not resource. So I begged her, could you stop resourcing me and just go to the trauma? So we started with the feeling of when you're on top of a roller coaster, a terror right before you drop down. So that was what it felt like to me. And the emotions were terror, fear. It felt like dread that something terrible was going to happen. And so they put the bilateral sound on me. And she asked me to go back to the first time I remembered feeling that. And what was so crazy is it went back to a terrifying experience where my parent that had the borderline personality disorder went into what's called a borderline split, where they actually don't even know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And as we're on the way to church, she's saying, "I'm going to kill you F kids." And there's four of us in the car, and there's no seatbelts back then. And we were literally flying down a steep road in church, and I thought I was going to die. My siblings were going to die because it was such erratic, insane, fast driving. And so underneath this trauma, where I'm trying to logic my way out of it, was the experiences in childhood when I felt that my mom, in those moments, who was a very loving mom 98% of the time, which went into these states where she was reenacting her mother, who was a raging alcoholic. I imagine she's deceased now, but I imagine drove her around in drunken states and in rageful states.
Yeah.
And so there were quite a number of experiences that I had in childhood. And I now recognize that I was severely traumatized in those moments. That the other part of my childhood was so good that it was very easy for me to say, no, I had two loving parents. They created fun experiences. And to sweep under the rug these experiences where I literally thought I could die.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so a lot of adults, men and women, are walking around with a lot of anxiety, bouts of very low self-worth, difficulty with eating too much, not eating, sleeping too much, not being able to sleep, insomnia, and not recognizing that there are developmental experiences underneath those symptoms. And most of the time they go to the doctor and they get on an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety. But the root cause of what's creating those symptoms are experiences in childhood where you didn't feel emotionally safe. You didn't feel safe to be who you are. You felt condemned. You felt you were programmed in a way that you weren't enough.
Yeah.
And so I think that trauma is a very broad term. And I think it's looking at the symptoms of what trauma actually is. There's a lot of people walking around diagnosed with anxiety and depression. I call them the evil twins. And 70% of people have both. So I'm so messed up. I have two diagnoses. To clarify, 70% of people don't just get anxiety or depression. They get both at the same time.
Wow.
And I was like that. I had it, they would come together. I either had it or I didn't have it, what the triggers were. So I didn't figure out until 45 years old that I did have complex trauma, meaning that there was prolonged exposure to multiple traumatic things. But would I have ever said I was a traumatized person? Not, no way.
Yeah.
I think that's very common, actually.
It's so common. You so perfectly touched on, I think, the temperature of the trauma climate, so to speak, because I love how you talked about the physical manifestations of it. I often, in practice, will see patients who are, oh, I didn't like when my parents got divorced, or I was sexually assaulted, but it doesn't really impact me anymore. But you're sitting in front of me with anxiety and you can't sleep and you have IBS. So maybe it does impact you more than you realize. And I also love how you brought up the ACEs, because you mentioned divorce on that list. And 50% of the population is divorced. And what about kids who are growing up in a home where maybe one of the parents struggled with a mental illness, but very common in previous generations, it wasn't diagnosed. And I almost think it reflects previous generations. The coping mechanism was don't acknowledge problems, don't talk about it. And so none of these things were really acknowledged as traumatic. But now we are moving into just a cultural environment where we feel more comfortable having space and feelings and emotions about different things. And so it's okay to unpack different experiences and recognize the impact they had on our nervous systems. And I do think that you're right. Most people would say, I had a great childhood with maybe a few things that were off, but that doesn't mean it's not lodged in their nervous system, creating all of these problems still.
Exactly. And the other thing I didn't know, so I got licensed around 38 years old. And what I didn't know for the first 7 years in practice was that so if you're helping couples, you teach them communication skills. If you've got parents in there who need teen parenting skills, you talk to them and teach them teen parenting skills. if someone is codependent and they don't take care of themselves, which is a sign of trauma, by the way, you teach them about codependency and you might give them Codependent No More and say, like, let go and send them to an Al-Anon or Codependence Enough on this, something like that. So talk therapy is useful for so many things. What happened for me was that what I've learned that I wish I had known when I first became a therapist is that in order to heal, trauma is not stored in the logical thinking brain. So you and I are talking from our human most advanced brain, the executive functioning talking brain. And if trauma was stored here, I could say things to you like, your dad loved you unconditionally, that your mom was hard on you. Logically, who could you trust more to reflect back to your worth, right? Mm-hmm. Problem is that when you've been impacted emotionally and physically, I say chronic criticism or insults for a lower form of emotional abuse, but still there. You have negative thoughts about yourself and you really struggle with self-worth when someone's mad at you. You feel like, oh, just so uncomfortable because those negative beliefs come up.
Yeah.
What I learned that I didn't know, and I wanted to give a refund to my previous client, I
would call them and say, I've got something better for you.
Is that trauma is not those experiences, even if it's just being put down chronically by a sibling or one of the parents, is that it gets lodged in your body. All over the world have realized that trauma is stored in capsule form in what we call the deeper brain.
Yeah.
Okay. So up on top of this is our brain. Okay. Mm-hmm. And right now you and I are talking forehead to forehead. This is the logical neocortex, the executive functioning brain.
Yeah.
Here, about 4 inches, is the limbic system. I call it the barking dog. So this is the brain. And what happens is when you get triggered by someone that does something similar to the person who hurt you, childhood or before, is that we flip our logical lid and we go into our survival brain, our more primitive brain. And this is where the amygdala is, which is the smoke alarm of the brain. And this is where we flip our lid, our logical lid. And this is what happened to me with the second anaphylaxis of my son, is that it was like, I would need a guy, completely insane. I'm not in my logical brain. I am, okay, somebody's dying and the world's coming to an end and I am primal. So we act when your partner triggers you and you go into that survival state. And then even deeper is the brain stem. Which is from our brainstem, we have spinal thalamic tracts that go all the way from our brainstem, all the way down our spine and into every organ of the body. And in order to have permanent freedom from the impact of traumatic experiences, we have to get from the limbic system, the mammalian brain, to the brainstem, which is right here on the top of the spine. And it goes into every organ of the body. So with these deeper brain-based trauma therapies, like brain spotting and EMDR, what happens is you're accessing the deeper regions of the brain where trauma is actually stored. So my story is once they stopped trying to resource me and they just went to the terrified feeling, because all I had was this terrified feeling. I had no idea where it came from.
Yeah.
They were accessing the deeper regions of my brain that put together that the same terror was experienced as we're careening down the freeway. And the same terror existed when the boy that I had a crush on in junior high forced himself on me. Same terror. So there were all these experiences that had nothing to do. My own flatlining, my son's, he went into anaphylaxis. He did not flatline. We were at the hospital in time. But my point is that I could never have logically told you, Chelsea, what was underlying.
Yeah.
And so the best sign that we have trauma are those symptoms. And I gave you a graphic. I don't know if you can put it up or I can put it up. But you're like, what?
Yeah, pull it up.
Okay. Do you want me to pull that up?
All right. Yeah.
So there's a graphic that Peter Levine did that is really telling, and I share it with almost everybody that comes to, I have it laminated, and I show people this slide, and they're like, are you videoing me, Lisa?
Oh, have this graphic that I got.
This graphic is really incredible. Peter Levine is the founder of Somatic Experiencing. And what this graphic shows is your autonomic nervous system. When people call for therapy, the most common symptom they have is anxiety. People will live with depression for a really long time. It's just low energy and kind of lower motivation and sadness. boy, when you have anxiety and you're off the roof with anxiety, you pick up the phone and you want to go to therapy. Most of the time that people have extreme anxiety, they've been triggered in things that have previously happened in their lives. So this graphic shows the symptoms of undischarged, meaning we have not released those trauma capsules from the traumatic stress that they carried. And the variety keeps the score or bears the burden.
Yes.
We can either go into what's called stuck on, which means you're overly sympathetic in your nervous system and you have adrenaline and cortisol flooding your system. And what are the symptoms if you're stuck on, meaning you are running like the Tasmanian devil? There is anxiety, often panic attacks, hyperactivity. You cannot sit still. You're restless. You're hypervigilant. What's going to get me next? There is like digestive problems. Like I said, IBS is super common. Emotional flooding. You're just flooded with emotion. There can be body pain, inflammation, signs of fibromyalgia. Insomnia is crazy awful. And because of all that adrenaline, cortisol, we can get very irritated, just like being totally stressed out and very irritable and angry. Some of my clients absolutely shut down. So sometimes a trauma is such that our primitive brain decides that we are going to be better off if we just shut down and freeze. So there can also be fainting involved. We go into a place of stuck off where literally it's too much for our body, our souls, our minds to handle. And so oftentimes the women that I work with that have been sexually abused, and even the men that have been sexually abused, they float away during the experience because it's such an assault on their self-identity that it's almost protective to like associate, not be there. And so when we go into stuck off, we go into depression. Flat affect means you have this blank look on your face. You're happy, your face doesn't show it. There's this almost stare.
Yes, like deer in the headlights.
Yeah, they call it the 1,000-mile stare.
Mm-hmm.
There's lethargy, chronic fatigue, feeling of deadness, isolation from people, shutting down, dissociating, meaning you're there but not there. You're going through the motions, but you're not really there.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be like low blood pressure, almost like the whole system is shut down. And I had a firefighter that had seen horrific overdoses, suicides, children who had died from drownings. And he was a firefighter for 15 years, and he literally went to bed for a year, gained 100 pounds, could not get out of bed, no life force, absolutely no life force. And he was diagnosed as having major depressive disorder and was referred for electric shock therapy.
Oh, wow.
And this man was in a classic freeze response that his nervous system could not take anymore, and he was checked out and stuck in freeze. And misdiagnosed as having depression, just like I was misdiagnosed as having anxiety and panic disorder. And this man needed trauma therapy to feel safe enough to move out of freeze.
Yeah.
I needed trauma therapy. And after that one session of EMDR, I came home and slept 8 hours.
That's amazing.
One session because my nervous system got regulated. And what brain spotting does and EMDR is if you are stuck on or stuck off, we want to be in this middle state, which is called coherence or homeostasis. And I looked up, why do you want to be in homeostasis? What's good about that?
Yeah.
And so I looked it up on the National Institute of Mental Health. And basically the definition is when you're in coherence, you have more intelligence, you have healthier thinking and behaviors, reduced anxiety, and you can sleep, you can think clearly and function. And so when people look at me and say, how did you do this? I've come for 2 half days and I'm sleeping and I'm eating and I love myself and blah, 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 blah. I have suffered with insomnia and nightmares and not sleeping for 30 years. Yeah. I've been in shock therapy for 30 years. And it's not that I'm such a good therapist or whatever. That's not it. It's that nobody had ever found a way to access where their traumatic experiences, or let's say what most people prefer, disturbing experiences, are held in the brain. They've now been released and the client, their nervous system, is in that coherent state. And so all these horrific symptoms of trauma simply are gone.
Yeah.
And well, so it's miraculous. And if you get the right form of therapy, it happens regularly that you're set free.
That's so amazing. And I love the way that you describe this thalamic tracts, because that really, in a physical way, helps people understand the physical connection between these experiences we've had somewhere in our lives and how that actually touches our body in these different physical ways. And as a trauma therapist, I'm sure you see a lot of these panic attacks and the insomnia. I sometimes see more, oh, I'm a mom and I'm just a warrior. That's just who I am. I can't sit still unless the house is totally clean. But it's the same thing. And I always tell people, your deep brain, your limbic brain, your brainstem, that reacts reflexively based on instinct rather than logically like our frontal lobe does. And so you may be going through life and something may happen that has, like you described, absolutely nothing to do. It's not unsafe at all. It has nothing to do with the unsafe things that happened to you as a kid. But your brainstem or your limbic brain is flagging that as somehow similar to this unsafe situation. And then all of a sudden your body is in a life or death response and you can't control that. That's the other thing I think people don't realize a lot is once you drop into that deep brain, cognitive brain does not matter. And that's one of the reasons why, as you mentioned, talk therapy doesn't always work. Even identifying, okay, what's my untrue core belief? It doesn't necessarily work just to tell yourself the true belief. You actually have to rewire those neurological tracks that you mentioned so that your deep brain responds differently and learns that this is not an unsafe situation anymore.
Exactly. And I loved EMDR. I got trained in EMDR immediately because it was 2005 when I flatlined and my son was on his way to doing it. And as soon as I had that one session, I immediately went to South San Francisco and trained with the founder of EMDR, Francine Shapiro. And then 3 years later, I wanted to be an EMDR trainer. So I went to meet with David Grand at a training he was doing, thinking it was EMDR training. It turned out to be a brain spotting training. And that was life-changing for me because I use brain spotting a lot and I love what you just brought up, because one of the biggest symptoms that something has happened is if you have chronicity of low self-worth and negative beliefs about self. And one of my favorite things to do is to take someone that has no idea they're traumatized, but that just has a belief like, I've never been good enough. I'm just inadequate. I never do it right. Or I'm not smart enough. Or if there was a caregiver that was incapable of loving, either from their own traumatic background or a mental health issue or even a physical health issue, then there's these negative beliefs. And so what I can do with brain spotting is I can find one place in the visual field that accesses, so that we find a place in the visual field where the body and the intensity of I'm not good enough is really strong. And let's just say for you, that's here and you feel sick and hopeless and dread, I'm not good enough. Got all these experiences. And if a caregiver made you feel not good enough, it's very high probability you will date people or even marry people that feel like you're not good enough. And nobody's recognizing that this is based on disturbing experiences. Nobody's getting that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I found is, let's say this is where you feel it in your body and your spirit mm-hmm. strongest of I'm not good enough. Then I would say to you, so let's just play for a minute.
Yeah.
I'm the therapist. I'd say, Chelsea, who do you have in your life that absolutely every time you're with that person, whether they're living or dead, made you feel like not only were you good enough, you were the bee's knees, like you were wonderful. Who was that for you that programmed you that you were so worthy, so lovable, so good enough? Who would that be?
I've done this before in brain spotting, so I have a good answer for it already queued up for you. My great-grandfather.
Your great-grandfather.
Yeah. Or my dog. Sometimes I use her too.
Yeah. Okay. I was doing a session on somebody that works with me who was having trouble passing their exam to become a licensed therapist. And the belief was, I don't deserve good things because I'm unworthy. And a very narcissistic, abusive mom had programmed her, almost like cult programming, You don't deserve anything good. You're bad. You're not good enough. But she had a grandfather. She was the favorite. She spent all the time in the world with him at his house. And we've got a program from mom. You're not good enough. You don't deserve good things. And grandpa was over here, actually. And she felt warmth, safety, absolutely that she deserved good things. And there was this whole other program. And she was, so what happens is the retina is part of your central nervous system. So as she's looking at this negative spot, feeling all the pain and all the experiences that led her to believe she wasn't worthy and wasn't good enough. The grandpa spot, it's keying into her primitive brain through those spinal thalamic tracts and her whole body, the truth that I've always been good enough. And so she's going back and forth. And about a half hour into the session, she starts bursting into laughter and says, how in the world have I believed all these years? I'm 50 plus years old, and I have believed my narcissistic mother over my grandfather, who has a tremendous capacity to love me. How could I have ever believed it? And she would glance over at this spot and start laughing. And then she'd go over on the grandpa spot and cried tears of joy that for the first time in her life, her body, her soul, her mind, and her thoughts had shifted to, I've always been good enough. She passed that exam, bingo, like that. Because in her, the reason it was powerful is we weren't just talking her through it from the logical brain. Because we're on what's called brain spots, we are keying into where she has an embodied deep brain memory, neural networks that tell her the truth of her worth. This very, and there's a whole body of life experiences and a whole body of the pain. I have found with low self-worth and shame, which I believe is why people complete suicide. I believe shame is the most dangerous, and self-loathing is the most dangerous place and emotion to be, because it is what breeds suicidal thoughts. It is what leads people to, it is so painful to hate myself that I must use, I must drink, I must get high, I must use opiates. I have to check out because the shame is so painful that it is more helpful to go to the opposite program that calls into question what your parents programmed you to believe. Mm-hmm. Because children don't have the capacity to say, I think my mama's a little nuts. That's dangerous. We have to say, me is the best mommy. And if mommy doesn't like me, it's all me.
Yeah. Yeah.
How scary for a little one to say, I think that mom doesn't really have it all together.
Or redefine reality on what mommy is actually doing. I think I heard that story from your sister of going down the hill, and from her it was, and we were lucky.
I was the chicken in the family. So maybe they were laughing. I was not.
Still a trauma.
I'm going to just say, I'm going to die and it's my fault, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Fault. And so even the whole idea of you've been programmed to believe this.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important. A lot of people want to protect their loved ones. So part of what kept me from being able to talk about the trauma that did happen for me as a result of these lapses into her becoming my grandmother is that I love her so much. And so it's really important for clients to be able to know that it isn't about making someone wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, I truly believe that my mom loved me and did the best she could, and that she had some mental health issues based on what her mother did to her. And I have nothing but love and compassion for my mom.
Yeah.
And I think when a therapist comes in and wants to other her or make your mother was terrible to you, I resist that.
Yeah.
Oh, she was a wonderful person who did a great job of mothering compared to what she got.
Yes.
And so I think that's another reluctance, is we want to protect, we love our parents and we don't want to throw them under the bus, right?
Yeah.
It's important that therapists make space for you can love your parents that hurt you and still deal with the hurt and still know they did the best that they could. So that's a deal breaker for a lot of people of going there, is that it feels like such a betrayal when the parent has done so much good. And I think that was a block for me for a long time to be able to do that. But I love seeing people. It's weird. Their whole face changes. I call it the brain spotting facelift. It's like my client will come in and I'm like, where is she? Where is he? And I don't recognize them.
I love that.
Because their face looks different. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you got the brain spotting facelift. I think maybe you're done with therapy. And they'll say something like this. Oh, that's funny that you ask, because on the way here, I realized I feel so much better. I think I might be done.
Oh.
And so then we go back to our treatment plan and we look at their negative beliefs and we look at their disturbing experiences. And I'm like, wow, out of 25 negative beliefs about yourself, you only have two left that are anything above a 3 in disturbance.
Yeah.
And on your 26 childhood and adult disturbing experiences, you only have 2 left. So I think we got 2 sessions max, and your anxiety and depression and insomnia and IBS is gone, and your irritability is gone. You know what I mean? And it's almost unbelievable how fast people can get there once they access the deeper regions of the brain where trauma is stored and held.
Yeah. So you described brain spotting and EMDR, but can you give a definition of what they are?
I started with EMDR, and compared to talk therapy, EMDR is the gold standard. It's amazing. Yeah. And EMDR uses bilateral stimulation, either with following the fingers or a light bar back and forth, so that your brain is getting left, left, right, left. So there's a cross-lateral bilateral stimulation. Some people use music. There's something called TheraTappers where people don't want the music. It goes left, left, right. Or you can do rapid eye movement. So EMDR stands for rapid eye movement desensitization, meaning we desensitize the trauma, reprocess the trauma. And so this bilateral stimulation, and then there's a whole protocol. And the protocol is, what are your emotions? What are your negative beliefs? What would you rather believe? And with the bilateral stimulation, the therapist holds space for the client and let their brain go where they need to go. And I came home from one session and slept all night. I loved EMDR, and I switched from being a family systems therapist, working with kids and their parents and tons of couples, to moving into trauma and sometimes in the context of couples or individuals. And so I had 30 hours a week of EMDR clients and wanted to become an EMDR trainer. So from 2005, when I trained in EMDR, I fell in love with it. I took every advanced class and did it all the live long day because I was so grateful for what happened for me. Then I called David Grand, who is an EMDR trainer, and said, I want to be the best EMDR therapist. I think I want to be a trainer. And I come sit with you for a couple of days and learn what you have to teach me. And he said, actually fly to Boulder, because everything I teach you in Manhattan is what you learn in Boulder. So it was called brain spotting. And I was like, oh, I love EMDR. I don't need this. I'll go hiking instead. I was riveted. So what happened was, for the first practice, I was working with somebody that was an EMDR clinician, but had no idea how to do brain spotting. And we're still friends today. And she works at the center, actually. And so we partnered up, and David asked us to pick something on a scale of 0 to 10 that was like not more than a 5 in disturbance. So middle of, I picked the whole going down the road thing.
Yeah.
I said, I think I might have trouble getting disturbed by this because I think I've already resolved it with EMDR. Because that was what I worked on for the flatlining thing. And so I only have my pen here, but so use a pointer. And so she said, when you think of being at the top of that hill and the terror and this and that, do you feel it more over here? So the retina is keying into different parts of your brain. And I said, no, I don't really feel it that strongly over here. Do you feel it here? I'm like, oh yeah. Because it was like, I was looking forward. And then what about over here? I go, yeah, I feel it, but not as much. And so then we found this spot, and it was me looking down the hill going, I'm going to die. We're going to crash.
Yeah.
And so she held this pointer up and all hell broke loose. My teeth started chattering. I started getting hot and started sweating. I was shaking. Okay. This did not happen in EMDR. I'm like, what the hell is this? I was shocked. It was like there were two parts of me. I think I'm healing on some super freeway. There's a clinical part of me going, what the hell? And why am I shaking like this? I also knew from reading Waking the Tiger that mammals shake when they're throwing off trauma.
Yes.
And I knew, being a trained trauma therapist, that the shaking and the teeth chattering was actually a good thing. And at the end of it, I think she got help. She's okay. Like, she's looking like she's having not a seizure. Like, it was really intense. But you know what? That intensity, when it was over, I felt lighter and more peace than I'd felt ever in my life. What shocked me is I had already cleared that with EMDR to a zero.
Wow.
So the question I had was, why was it when my retina went on this spot that my whole body released the trauma? Because I didn't have any of that shaking or shivering or teeth chattering or the temperature changes. And so when we throw off trauma, those physical sensations are a sign of incredibly powerful healing happening. And so during the course of the 4 days, because I was there for 4 days and I received a session every day and I did a session every day, I called my husband and said, something has changed. I said, I feel like my whole body and brain have been changed. We went scuba diving right after that class, and we've been scuba diving our whole marriage. And I always have had to come up before him because I've had a nervous breath. And he's 4 pounds heavier. This makes no sense. With the dive master way ahead of time. So we go scuba diving and we come up together for the first time. And I have 500 pounds of air more than he does. And he looks at me and he says, you asked me if you were calmer from this brain spotting you've been getting. It's not a little calmer. It's changed your breath. It's changed your neurophysiology. Lisa, you are breathing calmly.
Yeah.
You have never had more air than me. You have lost your anxiety on a whole nother level.
It's amazing.
And so I came home, didn't want to assume that my clients, I had 30 hours of EMDR, remember? So I did the EMDR protocol, but I added eye positions with each person. And client after client said, Lisa, your EMDR is so much better. What are you doing? All I'm doing is giving you access with an eye position to your primitive brain and body in a more powerful way. They said, yes, I can feel it in my body so much more. I feel like I released more. And so that's where the power of brain spotting to me is a little more effective, is that it releases the body in such a powerful way. And then for dissociative people, brain spotting has some techniques that are amazing for people who are dissociative.
That's what I mean.
Our center gets a lot of calls from people who are more dissociative because EMDR, maybe there's protocols for, I'm doing EMDR last few years, but I will if somebody asks for it. But with dissociation, there are some very advanced techniques where people can stay embodied. They can stay present with the trauma. And so I love it. And I'm a brain spotting trainer now.
So cool.
And I've been called the trauma mama in the Sacramento area because I love trauma. And people are like, that's so creepy. Like, how could you love trauma? And I said, if I couldn't heal trauma, I would hate trauma.
Yeah.
I'd bang my head against the wall. I'd feel so much pain if I couldn't help them. But I see people day in and day out get their lives back every day as I'm brain spotting them. And then I teach life coaches, body workers, clinicians, practitioners, nurses. I teach all kinds of people how to brain spot. And that is such a joy because they're setting their clients free. And there's nothing more spiritual and more gratifying than seeing someone who has really not had good self-worth all of a sudden say, you know what? I love myself. And I don't think you really get to graduate from therapy until the shame's gone.
Yeah.
You have yourself until you can have someone really mad at you and hold on to your value and your worth.
Yeah.
Of course, you're going to make amends if you've done something wrong, but you hold on to, I certainly didn't intentionally harm you. I'm so sorry. But that you hold on to your worth and your intention rather than going into this place of shame and I'm so terrible. And I watched that. And it's just I will die doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the most spiritual experience to watch people get set free from the experiences that programmed them, that they weren't good enough, they weren't lovable, they didn't deserve good things, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I feel like talk therapy allows you to just talk about trauma, but brain spotting and EMDR actually allow you to access and discharge trauma and in your neural networks and in your body. And as a doctor, sometimes when I'm referring people out for brain spotting, I'll try to explain it a little bit like when we sleep, that's a way that our body processes trauma. When we're having this rapid eye movement, and that's why you see nightmares when you've gone through trauma, or why you get insomnia. And brain spotting and EMDR are just tapping into a deeper science of how eye movement taps our body into these neural networks that we cannot access in talk therapy.
Exactly. Exactly. And as I've done this for more and more years, what I'm finding for dissociation and more complex trauma is the way out is often the solution spot. Okay. So if a client comes to me, okay, I'll give you an example from 3 weeks ago. I had clients come in, their beloved youngest child, they have three children, son completed suicide. Devastating. In doing the trauma therapy, my question was not what's bothering you the most and let's find a place in the neural network where you go there. My question was, what is the solution for you today? So I framed it this way. What is one thing that would help you bear this unbearable loss? So I'm looking for the answer and finding that in the neural networks. And the answer was to know I was a good enough parent. And so we found an eye position that went with the body sensation of all the memories of being such a good parent to this child. And so I found the eye position and they wept and cried. And I think the client said, I've done more for this child than God ever asked me to. And then that one was done. And then my next question was, and what will help you bear this? Mm-hmm. To know that my child is at peace. The struggle was so hard for so long. To know my child's at peace. All right, go inside. Where do you feel that in your body? What are the emotions you feel that your child's at peace now? And what was interesting is an image actually brought this sense of there is peace, there is no more suffering. And so oftentimes with people who are the most dissociative or the most fragile, it's more effective to go to the positive neural networks because the brain kind of goes, ah, I can let go here. I don't need to dissociate here because I'm on the solution to the problem, not the problem.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so I was teaching this. It's called expansion brain spotting, like the solution to the problem. And everybody I worked on was on the most powerful solution. And these were highly dissociative clients. And they were shaking and throwing off their trauma on the answer spot.
Interesting.
One was on a God spot. One was on a soul spot. Like, I know my soul is good. And their body was throwing off trauma, not being on the problem.
Yeah.
On the solution. So the way out for fragile clients and for dissociative clients is to come up with the most powerful answer to the problem. And I often say, I can see you have so much anxiety about processing the date rape that happened to you so many years, 50 years before. What do you need to be safe enough? And that would be the most protective, the most safe. I need to be in the arms of Jesus. He processed that with her far away, almost heavenly, and almost looking down on the situation.
Yeah.
And I believe had I gone for the most potent, charged up problem spot, trauma spot, that this client would have rolled into dissociation and not had access to process through, but because it was so safe. So sometimes one of the things I've learned is that less is more. Less of the trauma can often lead to more processing, more excavating it out, more peace quicker.
That's a big difference between talk therapy and brain spotting too, is with talk therapy, you're always going back and pulling back up the events of the trauma. But with deep brain therapies, you're going into the body responses that you carry with you every day around that.
Exactly. I like what you're saying about the body. So when I'm brain spotting, I would say, Chelsea, so maybe in the beginning, let's just pretend we're working on the I'm not lovable or I'm not good enough. Let's just say that you have this pit in your stomach and like how disturbing or activated is the pit in your stomach when you think of not being lovable, not being good enough because of the way you were treated. It's a 9. Okay. So maybe I put you on where that's true, but maybe you spend the majority of time on great grandfather where you know you're good enough and loved and get further with that. And when your body, the pit in your stomach, let's say it goes from a 9 down to a 2. It's just a faint little feeling. It's like a 2. There has been a corresponding shift in your brain. So what's in the body is in the brain. What's in the brain is in the body. So that 9 to 2 in your body, there's a corresponding change. And then when you come in the next week, I'm going to say, hey, where are you now with this spot over here? And maybe it's a 0. Or maybe it's popped up a little bit. We need to clear a little bit more. As a clinician, we're always tracking. Where is it in the body? Has it shifted? Because we know that your neural networks have shifted to. And that's how we track, is your brain regulated? And then we look at your symptoms. I'm going to look back at your anxiety scores. I'm going to look back at any of the signs and symptoms of trauma and make sure that you're clear.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I have a question for you regarding the trauma piece of things, because I feel like a lot of people, as we were talking about before, either they don't associate with trauma, or, and I even think there's this idea now that because trauma is so much more widely recognized, people don't want to go into the victim mentality of, oh, I left my kid at school and picked him up 30 minutes late and trauma now. What would you say to help? But I think all of us, let me backtrack for a second here, all of us have something that's keeping our nervous system in fight or flight that we have to work through. I don't think anybody's immune from that, really. So how do people tune in with what those things are, if that's the process that's going on in their body? I know you've described a lot of that, but what would you say to people who really have a hard time connecting with this idea that they have a disturbing experience, or maybe it doesn't look like a conventional or textbook-defined disturbing experience, but it still affects their nervous system?
Yeah, and so I think that what I would say to anyone is, if you have those signs and symptoms listed on the stuck on, stuck off slide, which is about your nervous system, even if you don't identify with it, if you've got those symptoms, try one of these deep brain-based modalities, because you don't have to know what it is to know that there's something. And so many people come in not identifying at all as having trauma. Why they come to Pacific Trauma Center, I don't know. They come in and often the first session is, I don't want to be anxious anymore. And so we'll ask them where they feel the anxiety in their body and find an eye position that goes with the anxiety. They're listening to bilateral music, and a whole life experience that led to the anxiety will come up and be released. And you don't have to know what it is or even identify as having trauma. But if you have those symptoms that we put up in the stuck on, stuck off slide, it's not going to hurt you to try it. And then the other thing is, ask yourself, are there any negative beliefs that hold you back in life? If you believe I'm not lovable, you may not go for the partner that you really wish you could go for because you don't feel like you deserve it. So you might go for someone that won't treat you right. Or if you believe you're not good enough and a promotion is available at work, you might be perfectly capable of that position, but not go for it because the program that one of your caregivers or both gave you is that you're not worthy, right? And so those are the kinds of things. I think if you have negative beliefs about yourself or you have any of those signs and symptoms, many people are falsely diagnosed with anxiety and depression or one or the other or both. And the truth is they've got some unresolved trauma, and it could just be a scary moment that is the root cause or etiology of the anxiety and experience that they don't quite, they're not putting together, but their brain got it together in these modalities.
I think something you said triggered my brain to think that even if you don't connect with negative beliefs, if there's something, it's a stuck pattern in your life, you are never making enough money, you aren't happy in your job, you can never quite reach the weight you want to get to, all of those are physical symptom reflections that there's a negative belief circuit that your brain is stuck in. Yeah. And then you get to the root of that, there's some type of disturbing experience or trauma or something like that.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that I just did a recording that I sent out to my list on eating disorders and brain spotting and trauma. And anybody that's struggling with binge eating, anybody that's struggling with restricting or purging, any of those things, often the root is a traumatic experience. I have had people that have come in for no other reason than their health is being impacted because of obesity, and that they're now having to take insulin, and they're wondering if maybe there's something there. And I've had clients in a 45-minute session lose 100 pounds because we get to the feeling and the body sensation right before they binge. Literally, I did a demonstration at a group event on a therapist who identified that after lunch, she would eat a whole nother lunch. She logically knew she wasn't hungry, but there was this emptiness that was horrific that she would feel after lunch. I don't know why it was after lunch. And she would eat a whole second lunch. and that she knew she wasn't hungry and that she knew she was way overweight as a result. So I did a 45-minute demonstration going after the felt sense of emptiness in her belly. When I got her on the brain spot and processed her for 45 minutes, it went back to the exact feeling she had after a teenage sexual assault. I saw her 3 months later. She decided to take my brain spotting phase one training. And I looked at her, I said, oh my goodness. And she said, yeah, I've lost 60 pounds.
Wow.
And I said, so what's happening? Like when you get the empty feeling, she goes, I don't get it anymore. And she said, so I don't eat a second lunch. And she'd lost so much weight with one session. And then same with another client, had a belief that if I let myself be my regular weight again, last time she was like her regular weight, her husband and dad both died of brain cancer. And she had this belief that if I am at my goal weight, something terrible will happen. And she was 100 pounds overweight. And so we processed that with brain spotting. And then she was free to let herself
lose. Yeah.
All of those things can be a sign without you knowing what it is.
Yeah. I had a client that I referred to the trauma center. And she came in. She wanted to lose weight. She had acid reflux. She had high cholesterol and she had diabetes. Great. I can help you with all of that. So we get to talking and turns out she's binge eating and she's also not sleeping well. She's binge eating. She has a stressful marriage. She was not sleeping well because she has a stressful marriage. Doesn't feel like she can even set a boundary to sleep in a different room so she can get some sleep. And I told her, I can help you with everything you mentioned, but they are not, every single thing you mentioned is caused by the binge eating, and the binge eating is from the stressful relationship, and you got to go deal with the trauma before we can heal all this. I'll work with you in the meantime to try and offset the effects. But
the trauma, we're so trauma informed that there's not many doctors that understand that relationship.
Yeah,
you know.
But that's what I want my clients to understand, and that's why I wanted to talk to you today. Is it is enmeshed, and I work with chronic illness population, and there is always some type of relationship that's off or some type of disturbing experience in a chronic illness picture. And I went into chronic illness because I've had chronic illness. So I can say that from experience.
And that's a trauma too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trauma is really big.
Yeah. So with relationships, what are some signs in relationships that you may have something in your nervous system that's still activating from a disturbing experience? Because I feel like sometimes for people, it's they don't choose the best partner. And maybe they're in a 30-year marriage, they're never going to get a divorce. But there's still signs in the relationship dynamics or in who they chose that there is trauma there. And that might be their only sign is their relationship issues.
Yeah, this is true. And so if there's a pattern, so basically, I think we have to define what's a healthy relationship, what's not, right? So I really like Townsend and Cloud's book, Safe People. It's got a Christian perspective, and some people don't like that, but I think they do a really good job of laying out like what's safe and what's not safe.
Yeah.
And the question is, are you safe to be you with that person? Or walking on eggshells, are you condemned, belittled, criticized? Do they always have it together, but they're pointing out what's wrong with you? Is there no equality in the relationship? One's up, one's down. Are they there for you? Are you doing all the giving? And is there a failure of that person to take accountability for their mistakes? Or are they always the one that has it together and it's you? Those are all signs of a toxic relationship. A lot of people think a toxic relationship is if you're being hit. Obviously toxic, right? But this power differential or need for control over you and not like you don't can't safely be you and be valued for you. You are in a toxic, unsafe relationship.
Yes.
Look, is a really good one. And so what I see is that we know this from Harville Hendrick's work in therapy, that there's an image that we're attracted to. And it's often a combination of the good traits and the bad traits of our parents. And so it's familiar. Okay. So if one parent was super fun and outgoing, you're going to want super fun and outgoing. But the other parent's super critical and harsh, then you're going to end up with somebody that's fun and outgoing and reminds you of that, but also has those biting comments, that critical spirit that is familiar. Huge attraction. Okay. And then when the dust settles and we're no longer in the dopamine high, mm-hmm. the center of relationship, and we go into more of the attachment, all of a sudden, that critical spirit begins to bring up all those feelings of the critical spirit in the parent who programmed you were unworthy. And all of a sudden, Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
That same relational pattern, that same, like, where you're being programmed by your partner that you're not worthy, you're not quite good enough, that there's something inherently wrong with you. And I think identifying what's unsafe, and then if the person wants to stay in the relationship, like maybe there's still a love for the fun side, but really, I think that this work is really important, because one of the things that I think is so important, and I do this thing called soul spotting, is, Chelsea, what's the truth of the goodness of your soul? What do you want to be remembered as at your celebration of life?
Yeah.
That I was kind, that I was compassionate, that I tried my best to help people, that I gave my all to my clients, that I gave my all to my friends. I loved my partner fiercely, that I loved my children fiercely, whatever those things are. And I would say, Chelsea, how well do you think you're doing with that? And usually what people say is what they want to be remembered for is how they live. And so if someone's in an unsafe relationship and wants to stay sane, they have to be deprogrammed from the original program of the caregiver and the continued program with the partner, and get an embodied, like in your body, in your mind, in your spirit, an embodied knowing that the truth is that you're a beautiful human being, imperfect, of course, but that your heart is good, that you are good. And what I love to do with that is to give the person, like sometimes it's on the ceiling, give the person where the knowing of the goodness of their soul is in the visual field. And I give that as homework, that when the haranguing starts, you can stay fully embodied in who you are. And you may say, I'm not going to leave the relationship, but tonight I'm not going to be with you because I don't like how you're treating me. Okay. And literally just be able to set those boundaries calmly, because the individual knows the truth about who they are. Very different to be around someone who you know puts you down. So I have someone that I know puts me down chronically. I hear about it, but it's family members. It used to be really hard to be around that person who would never do it to my face, but I would hear from all kinds of other people, do you know the things she's saying about you? And I think my highest goal for every client, and I think that this is the goal of every therapist, is for the client to really, truly get an embodied love for self. If you're in an unhealthy relationship, it can really be that I'm proud of who I am. It takes the sting out of their parent criticizing them. This is about my partner. This is not about me. And it's easier to set boundaries and just remove yourself. If you really want to hang with me and watch a show, you're going to have to quit the criticism. So I think that the way out for somebody that's in an unhealthy relationship that wants to stay in it is to do brain spotting on the truth of who they are as a soul, the goodness of their soul. And I call it soul spotting.
That's such a beautiful explanation, because I talk a lot about toxic relationships and do education on that. And I think a lot of people think, oh, okay, toxic relationships are for women in their 20s dating the guy at the gym. Or I share a lot about my experience of, I almost married somebody who told me when I met him he had high narcissistic traits, and I thought it was funny. So red flag for me now. I just, I didn't get it. I was really young. And of course, cut him out of my life and good, one and done. And what we don't always see with toxic relationships is, okay, I'm telling you, you need to do this for your health. I can't because my husband, or you're only staying in the marriage for the kids, or you keep how you really feel close to yourself to make everybody else around you happy. And those are all relationships that you're probably not going to get out of. I mean, for me personally, sure, I cut somebody out of my life who told me he was narcissistic, but I have other relationships that I can't just cut out that sometimes display narcissistic traits. And so I think that's such a great explanation of, we can use these deep brain tools to really work on the truth of creating our sovereign soul boundaries. And we don't have to be as impacted by the toxicity around us. But it's really that work of carving out ourselves and not giving ourselves away.
Yeah, when you have you 100%, what I find is that sometimes I don't, and I really want to clarify, toxic or unsafe relationships are not just love partnerships.
Yeah.
These are friendships. These are sibling relationships. This is parent-child relationships. This is work, colleague relationships. Boy, there can be toxicity there, jealousy, envy, putting you down, manipulating you. But it's not just love relationships. But what happens when you do the work, and this is done by not going to the problem. This is going, I call them truth spots. And I believe when you really get the truth of who you are, the goodness inherent within your soul, and you blow something, like you get something out late and somebody blows up at you that it went out late, that it's very different when you have an embodied love for yourself. You're like, I'm so sorry. I blew it. I didn't mean to. And it's like, I can honestly say that when I blow something and somebody's angry, it used to remind me of terrifying anger, and I would go into survival terror and anxiety and IBS.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's because I've got me in a very embodied way. I know I'm not perfect, but I know I try hard to do the right thing and the kind thing. So that's enough for me. I try my best to be kind and do what's right. But what I notice is that when someone really gives me grief about something, that it doesn't have the sting that it used to have. And I actually have some distance from it. Is this person constantly doing this to me? Or is this a one-off because they're stressed? If I start to see that, oh, this has been happening for quite a while, or if what happens is my body will tell me, I'll get like a bit of a tension in my solar plexus. Like my body is signaling me, you're walking on eggshells with this person. This person doesn't feel safe. And it's really important to just recognize and to be able, if you love yourself, it's, this isn't feeling good to me. I need to have less contact. And whether you tell the person that or just quietly back away, it's being honest with yourself. Is this person safe for you? Is my body relaxed? Do I feel like I can be vulnerable and admit mistakes? Or is this person unsafe and they're going to use my mistakes to condemn and belittle me and make me small?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's unhealthy.
Yeah. You so perfectly connected unhealthy / toxic relationships, trauma, finding ourselves, our body, how that manifests as physical symptoms, and how all those things are connected. That's something that I feel really passionate about people understanding, and yet they're things that can be really hard to connect. Thank you so much for sharing all your insight. Anything that I missed that you have additional thoughts on that you really want people to know about these topics?
Oh, let me think. I guess maybe the biggest message is this is fast and it works and you don't have to suffer anymore. If you have low self-worth, get help. And a lot of it's going for the positive. If you have anxiety and depression and you've tried medications and you tried talk therapy, try this. Let's get your nervous system regulated. Like the nervous system being regulated. I'm not a scientific person. Science is not my gift, but I will tell you that the science that says that your nervous system can be regulated and in that coherent state by accessing the deeper regions of your brain, what I want people to know is that you don't have to identify as having trauma in your life for this work to benefit you.
Yeah.
If you have low self-worth, if you have some anxiety, if you have some of these symptoms, even if you have no clue why, this work, it's so fast. It's so effective. And yeah, that's the message, is that I've had a lot of clients come up to me and they go, I'm really mad. And I go, why are you mad? And this was a police officer. He said, I'm just so mad. I sat and talked therapy for several years after my partner on the police force, he died a horrific way in front of him. And he said, I spent these years in talk therapy. I became an alcoholic. I lost my wife. Then I come here and I have five one-hour sessions, and I can't get upset about my partner's death. All I feel is peace. And you're angry. Why? And he said, why didn't I know about this before I became an alcoholic? Why did I sit and talk for 5 years when I needed five sessions? And so part of my mission, this is why I want to do a Trauma Mama podcast, is I want the world to know, hey, you can heal this in a couple sessions. The average is 6 1.5 sessions for marriage. For
the worst trauma.
So even if you don't even identify with trauma, it's probably going to be a lot less. You don't have to suffer anymore, you know?
I think everybody should if they can. I always call it my therapy vitamins, but specifically referring to brain spotting and EMDR to illustrate. You take vitamins that you read about are good for you on the internet to improve your quality of life. You're not necessarily identifying with diabetic or ulcerative colitis. You're just taking vitamins because you care about your health. Same thing with the brain, the EMDR. Do you care about your peace, your well-being, the way your brain impacts your body? Try it. So,
and if it's not an allergy, colitis is often trauma. I had it for years and it was like, yes, I have a gluten allergy, but you know what? It was
like trauma. Your gut's your second brain. Where can people find you in your work and get help from your resources?
Yeah. Pacific Trauma Center is in Folsom, California. So you can just look up pacifictraumacenter.com. I'm the Trauma Mama Lisa Larson on Instagram. I think it's Trauma Mama _ Lisa Larson.
And I'll link everything in the notes too.
Yeah, I'll take quick. You can link all of that. But yeah, this is quick work. It's fast work and effective work. Oh my gosh. You'll have a big happy smile and you'll feel this energy and relief. People don't look the same.
You get the facelift, the
facelift and therapy.
You graduate, you look
one more because you want. So
it's just like this relaxed face that you don't see. It's very different. Thank you for recognizing how powerful the work is and sharing it with people, because that's my mission. Once I got healed, I'm like, I can't keep this to myself. This is too good not to share with people that you love.
Thank you for sharing. I definitely want to try and amplify the mission and get that message to more people.
So. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Women Who Roar podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm on a mission to help protect women from toxic relationships by supporting them and recognizing the signs. I also want to help women heal from toxic relationships by letting them know they are not alone. The stories and conversations I share on this platform and in my book, Losing You, Finding Me, are designed to do just that. I'd love for you to help spread this mission by subscribing to this podcast, leaving a review, and sharing it with a friend. Also consider picking up a copy of Losing You, Finding Me for a deep dive into healing from trauma and toxic relationships. Until next week.